Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Well, that is Ala Abdelnaby and my beer-drinking buddy Kate Scott last night as the Sixers blow one down in South Philadelphia. Derek Bodner joins us now. Derek is the Sixers reporter. He's more than that. He's the poobah. He's the grandmaster of the Daily Six newsletter, which focuses on the Philadelphia 76ers. Thanks for joining us. Derek, timing couldn't be more interesting.
No, it was perfect. We lined this up yesterday. No idea what it was going to bring, and we have plenty to talk about.
No, so I guess let's start with, how do you blow a 24-point lead to a sub-500 team like the Clippers, who are missing their good players? How does that happen?
Yeah, they're missing everything that makes them relevant. It was not a good team they played last night. But a comedy of errors. The Sixers were outscored, I think, 58-33 after the midway point of the third quarter. The Clippers threw a little bit of zone at the Sixers, and they looked like they were completely ill-prepared to attack it. They went small against the Sixers, and that opened up some of their three-point shooting. And the Sixers, outside of Joel Embiid, just couldn't make a shot, and the offense wasn't crisp. They blew a lot of defensive rotations. They struggled to get back in transition. Pretty much everything you would have to do to blow a 24-point lead with 19 minutes left to play, they found a way to do.
So I guess my question is, how do you explain that? I agree with everything you said, Derek. And, I mean, you did the whole checklist there. But my bottom line, how does that happen?
Yeah. Part of it is, they are – obviously, the Clippers are way more shorthanded than Sixers, so it's not an excuse, but they do only have 8 players. One of them is Charlie Brown, who probably shouldn't be in the league. The other one is Isaiah Joe, so they don't really have a lot. Like, if something is not working, and last night Furkan Korkmaz was not working at all, they don't really have a plan B to go to. But really, it's just, I think there's a natural human inclination that when you're up that big, you have to fight not taking your foot off the gas. And Doc Rivers didn't have any of the buttons to push. A lot of that run there in that third quarter started when he still had his starters out there, what theoretically should be the squad that's able to hold that back. The starters came out flat there in the middle of the third quarter, and he just never found the right buttons to push, and it just snowballed from there. I do think the Sixers, by and large, have been playing decent basketball here of late, and they haven't really blown too many big leads. They blew a lot last year, haven't blown a whole lot this year, so I don't want to make too big of a deal of it. But it was a real bad loss last night, and something that you hope doesn't become a trend.
So Doc was asked after the game what I thought was a fair enough question, what part of this might be coaching, and he got very bristly about it, which is not the first time he's done that this year. I don't know if it's just, a coach versus media kind of thing, or it means something in the bigger term, but, how dare you ask me that question just doesn't seem an appropriate thing for a coach to say in Philadelphia.
No, and you're right. It was a completely fair question. Like, when you blow a 24-point lead in the middle of the third quarter, everyone in that locker room should be asking, well, what could I have done differently to stem that tide? And he really – like, the question was just, like, how much of that do you attribute to coaching? And it probably could have been phrased a little better, something along the lines of, could you have done anything to prevent it? Something a little less pointed. But this is a story only because Doc Rivers made it a story. It was – like I said, I think there's plenty of reasons why you can view this game as an anomaly. And Doc Rivers really made it a story by going out and answering the way that he did. And you're right, it has happened a couple times here. I think by and large, I think part of it is probably frustration, maybe even stemming from last year, and maybe a little bit of pressure under Doc Rivers. But I think part of it is that he just feels like he shouldn't be questioned by by media members that he doesn't think are qualified to question him. There is certainly a little bit of stubbornness and arrogance to him and to his answers this year. And you hope that's, you know, there's a little more self-reflection going on behind closed doors so he and the team can improve. That's really what you're worried about. How he responds to me or Austin Krell or whoever's asking the question isn't too relevant. But I'm not, I question that a little bit. He seems a little bit arrogant, quite frankly.
If I just want to follow up real quickly, because you made note last night and tweeted that Joel Embiid reflected on his own performance, and by the way, after scoring 40 points. Yes?
Yeah. He said, yeah, but I had five turnovers. And quite frankly, with how much he was handling the ball, five turnovers isn't even that big of a number. I mean, he had 40 points and six assists. Like, if you have the ball in your hands that much, you're going to turn the ball over. Turnovers weren't a huge problem for the Sixers down the stretch. But I do think it's something where Embiid has grown a lot in the past. You know, in past years, he would show flashes of great scoring instincts, but struggle to carry the team like he has this year. In order to get to the point in his career where he can do this on a consistent basis, I think he had to reflect a little more on what his weaknesses were and make strides to improve that. And I think he's certainly done that here over the last couple of years. I think it's resulted in a very consistent MVP caliber player. The past 2 years, he has been a top three player in the world. Almost no questions asked. I don't think you get to that point, even with his insane physical gifts, if you aren't willing to look inside and really look at your weaknesses in a real way. I think it was quite contrasting to Doc's approach.
You know, we were talking about this in the first hour, Derek. We were talking a little bit about Embiid and his play this year. And I agree with you. I mean, I think right now, I mean, if I had an MVP vote, it would be for him. I mean, I just think the way he's been playing is as good as he's been. I mean, this is the best we've ever seen him, and for an extended time. And it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, it seems to me that he's really worked at his conditioning. I mean, it seems to me now in he's playing a lot of minutes, and he's carrying a big load. But it seems to me that in the fourth quarter, he's not quite as out of gas as he was before. I know we always talked about he needs to work harder to stay in shape and blah, blah, blah. It actually looks like he's taken that to heart. It looks to me like he's a better conditioned player than he was.
Yeah, there's no question. He's more effective late in games. He plays every night. Like, we don't have a daily conversation of is there a rest day coming in? Is Joel Embiid going to be available? He's missed, I think, 10 games so far this year, and eight of them were because of COVID, which you can't really blame him for since we're in the middle of a pandemic. He has been a night-in, night-out, day-to-day player. And not only that, but he's playing at the highest level, the most consistent level, and he's playing better, deeper in the games. There's no question he is a better-conditioned athlete, and he took his dieting seriously and his training and his conditioning all seriously to the point where he, quite frankly, didn't earlier in his career. And, I would have liked to have seen this kind of mentality a little bit earlier than he got to it. But the fact that he got to it is certainly a big part of why he's playing the way he is.
So he is having this monster season, and there's part of me that is conflicted. Should we just be enjoying the greatness that Joel Embiid is giving us, or should we be frustrated that, to be honest, they will not contend for a title because they are in paralysis over the Ben Simmons thing?
Well, I certainly lean very far on the frustrated side. I look back, I've been living in the area my whole life. I look back at the careers of Barkley and Iverson, and yeah, they were flawed players. There were things they should have and could have improved. But when you're talking about, you know, having Keith Van Horn as your second best player, having Johnny Dawkins as your second best player, like, that's just not mm-hmm. a championship caliber supporting cast.
Yeah.
And I look at Joel Embiid and his career and the fact that he has developed into everything that he has, and that the Sixers right now just aren't a legitimate title contender. And to me, that is very, very frustrating because you don't get a chance. Joel Embiid could end up being one of the three or four best players in franchise history. And he's not – only 1 year did he have a supporting cast that was capable of running with him to an NBA Finals. And they got within one shot of beating the eventual NBA champions. If they don't fix this, and this trade is the biggest chip they have to fix this, it to me is very, very frustrating.
Well, you just took me right to where I was going to go with my next question, which is the idea of the trade. And the conversation, of course, heated up again this week, and it's out there, the idea of Ben Simmons. We know the trade deadline is February 10th, right around the corner. And there's all kinds of conversation about how likely it is and what they're looking for, and is Daryl Morey really still willing to just ride this thing out for the entire season, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you're closer to it than either Glenn or I. What's your feeling of the situation?
Yeah, I think Daryl Morey, if he doesn't get what he wants, he's very willing to ride this out this summer. You know, I think Daryl Morey, if there's one thing that defines him, he is very focused that the top 15, 20, 30 players in the league have an outsized impact on winning a championship. And I don't disagree with him. You know, I just, the question always becomes, well, what can you expect to change over the summer? And I think there are things like, I mean, a lot of the chatter around the league, both in public and in private, is whether or not James Harden's sign and trade is realistic. And if Daryl Morey looks at that and he thinks there's a pretty decent likelihood, I can understand trying to wait. There is certainly some risk in, you know, basically punting this decision and always waiting for that big, big chip to come. But I also look at it like if they trade right now for, you know, Buddy Hield and Harrison Barnes, I don't think they're a contender anyway. I don't think you're really like, I think a lot of people look at it as salvaging the season of Joel Embiid. And I think they're far enough back that if you make a trade like that, where you're getting sub all-star players back, I don't think that really changes the calculus too much. So it's a tough spot because you don't know how many years you can get out of this from Joel Embiid. But I do think that it's a very unique spot. Like, this is a guy who refused to show up, certainly has hurt their trade leverage quite a bit, and you're trying to make the most of it. I think there's a real chance that Daryl Morey could hold on to him, though. I think that is real.
I don't know that I've ever seen one guy wreck a franchise the way Ben Simmons is succeeding with doing this. And I do get it. I mean, I do understand that Morey, what you just said, if he makes the best trade he can now and it doesn't really help them, what's the point? You're punting the season, but I don't know. I mean, Sixers fans, if nothing, have shown amazing patience over the last decade. How does Embiid feel about this? I mean, he is playing this amazing basketball, and then last night, you know, it's like they get 5 points from Furkan, and, you know, they got to play all these guys. How does Embiid feel about seeing his career, I don't want to say be wasted because that's too far, but you know what I'm saying. Playing this amazing basketball and knowing that they really don't have a shot to win the title.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, over that last 19 minutes when the Sixers lost the game, Embiid had 16 points on 9 shots. The rest of his team had 17 points on 26 shots. He had no help whatsoever. You know, I think right now Joel Embiid is, first of all, I think he's pretty confident in his own abilities, which is a trait that star players have, but the Sixers still have a very, very good record when he plays. And I think he probably thinks they're closer to being a contender than I do. I think he has a lot of confidence in himself and his teammates. I think the real question becomes, okay, he's supportive of it now. Would he be supportive of it if they lose in the second round? Will that change his perspective? And will that change his perspective then if they go into the summer and don't get the sort of star that I wouldn't say Daryl Morey is promising, but that I think everybody is looking towards? Those to me are the real questions. I think right now Joel Embiid is supportive of giving Daryl Morey the leeway he has to get the best return he can. My only concern is what happens to Joel Embiid's mindset if that best return doesn't end up coming to be. So I think right now he's in a pretty good spot. Certainly he gave a public backing the other day. I think it was Wednesday, you know, when he said that we have all that we need. My only concern is, does that mindset change?
You know, we were talking about the fact that and you said you think it's a very good possibility that there is no deal before February 10th, and that Daryl Morey is just going to say, no, I'm not trading him for a bag of donuts. I'm going to wait for the best offer. And so February 10th comes and goes, and no move is made. If you look around here and at the Eastern Conference, and you look at the teams, I mean, you've got all of these teams that are all bunched within 3 or 4 games of each other. You got the Nets, you got the Sixers, you got Miami, you got Charlotte, you got Chicago, you got Milwaukee, you got Cleveland. All those teams separated by just a handful of games. Is there a chance? I mean, given how close it all is here in the East and how much these teams have just kind of jockeyed back and forth with nobody breaking away, if the Sixers stay put with what they've got, is there a chance they could get into the postseason and still win the East?
Certainly, I think they could. You could talk me into them having a top three seed, because right now their schedule up until the trade deadline is pretty easy. You know, if they don't make a trade right now, they should come out, you know, past February 10th and have a real good record. They could be a top five team in East. You get a good return, you could certainly move up the standings a little bit. I still, you know, as much as the East is bunched up a little bit, I still think there are a couple teams, mostly Brooklyn, especially now that Kyrie is playing road games. Milwaukee, I think, is underperforming, but I think when they get to the playoffs, I think they will turn it on. And Miami, you know, they've had a lot of absences and injuries. I think they are pretty significantly better than the Sixers right now. So I think those three teams, you know, asking me, can they beat, you know, two of those teams in a series? I think that would be very unlikely. But when you have the best player in the world, and right now Joel Embiid is playing like the best player in the world, I guess anything's possible. The problem is Kevin Durant and Giannis are both neck and neck with Joel Embiid, or at least real close to him, and they have a much better supporting cast. I just think it would be very tough for Joel Embiid to essentially lift a whole bunch of just guys, just fungible guys that have no business really being starters on an NBA champion above those two teams.
Good job working fungible into the conversation. Derek Bodner, how can people get this brilliance on a regular basis?
Well, I don't know about that, but they can go to daily6.com to get my perspective on a daily basis, or at Derek Bodner NBA on Twitter.
There you go. Hey, good stuff. Thank you as always.
Yep, thank you.
Thanks,
all right,
Derek.
Man. All right, be good. It's pretty depressing.
Yeah, it all is. Right, I was just looking at the standings the other day, Glenn, and that jumped out at me. I said, look at how all these teams are all bunched together.
Yeah, I know.
You know, I mean, it makes you think, well, maybe they have a chance. But then you look at, I mean, you just look at Brooklyn and you look at Milwaukee. I agree with him. When it comes down to the playoffs, you know, I just don't see the Sixers winning a series against those teams. Yeah.
Yep. Let's sneak in Carl in Hillsboro. Carl, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, first, thanks for taking me, Rob. Hi, Ray. Great to talk to you guys.
I'm Glenn, Carl, and have been for a long time.
I'm sorry, Glenn. That's a terrible way for me to start. My movie is Breaking Away, coming of age movie. It's I think you guys, it came out in 1979. Working roots kid, you know, kind of learns to come to term with that, and then there's a great bike race, and he goes to college. Plus,
all right, Ray, I have a dilemma here.
Yes,
because as you know, Ray, when you and I spoke before the show,
mm-hmm.
I said that's my one.
That was your movie, correct?
I think you and I have it like number 17 or so.
In the top 20 in our book.
Yeah, Ultimate Book of Sports Movies. So I'm very inclined to agree with Carl's choice. On the other hand, he thought I was Rob Ellis or Rob Cherry. I'm not sure, but
yeah,
whatever.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. You're in the early lead because that is a great coming of age movie.
Oh, great! And the serial character Glenn. That I have it right. I don't call frequently, so my apologies.
It's all right.
The serial character played by Daniel Stern, you know, the line, well, what are we going to do, just waste the rest of our lives? And he says, yeah, well, I thought that was the point.
It is great. What do you have on the Eagles?
The Eagles, well, two things. One, by the way, I was in the owner's box, believe it or not, and Men Howie Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie. Do you think that they will get a supporting cast around Jalen Hurts is number one and stay with him? And number two is, should Gannon go elsewhere, thoughts on a replacement defensive coordinator?
Okay, well, and thank you, Carl. We talked about Gannon in the first hour. I think you and I would be okay if he left, if they get one of the very capable defensive coordinators on the market.
Right, and they're out there.
Yeah. As far as will they get a supporting cast around him, it would seem, Ray, the priority for the offense, we've said, you and I have agreed, they should spend most of their draft capital on the defense. But
I would.
Okay, I would as well. So the priority on offense would seem to be, let's get a free agent wide receiver who can stick right in there so that you can move everybody else down a notch,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, Devontae Smith is Devontae Smith, but the other guys, at best, are role players. Is there a free agent wide receiver whom Ray Dinger has his eye on right now?
Allen Robinson.
Fine with me.
I would also investigate Chris Godwin.
Mm-hmm.
I know, you know, he suffered the knee injury and he suffered it late in the season, which is not good, but it also might lessen his value in the open market, might make teams a little shy. I mean, if he were totally healthy, as good as he is, he would cost you a lot of money. Maybe coming off the injury, maybe not so much. But those are the two names that jump out at me. I would obviously need to know a little bit more about Godwin's condition and when he might be available and stuff, but I really like him, and I always liked Allen Robinson.
I think those are good. I'm just trying to think. Kenny Galladay? Maybe not.
Yeah, no, I mean, he sort of bombed out this year.
He had a terrible year in New York.
Right, I mean, they spent a ton of money on him.
I know.
And he gave him nothing. Yeah. I don't think he got in the end zone one time.
No, he was terrible. All right. 215-592-9494. Ray Dinger, Glenn Mack now. Stay in there. We want to talk to everybody. Coming up, we got a great This Week in Philadelphia Sports History. Oh, you'll probably remember the moment. Ray and Glenn on 94 WIP.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.